And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. Derek Van Riper here with Al Melchior. The rotation on Sundays continues. And yes, I am in a new location, which is why you can't watch this episode on YouTube. I don't understand how the sun works, Al. My new apartment doesn't have overhead lighting in the bedrooms. We haven't purchased lamps yet. So I only have one light that I can move around the apartment right now that is portable. Obviously, by the end of the day today, I will have more. But what I did not account for was that, it's a lot earlier out here, which I'd thought about, but I figured by 7 a.m. the sun would be up and I'd get that natural light through the window. And B, a northern exposure does not give you the same light as other exposures. It gives you the least amount of sunlight. So that great sunlight I had in my last apartment, in my last office, it is gone. So it changes the video setup quite a bit. So all the moving boringness aside, how's everything going for you?
All good here. Great to have you back, DVR, and looking forward to chatting some waiver stuff with you.
And the funniest thing about this is I was on the road for 4.5 days. You know, my wife and I left Wisconsin on Monday just before lunchtime. We got to our new place early Friday afternoon. The entire league, it seems like, changes over the course of a week. At least I'm so used to watching everything unfold on what feels like a granular sort of level, right? You got TweetDeck running all day. You know, you're scouring RotoWire for news and notes. You're reading all these different articles out there. And it feels like you know about every single thing that's happening. You got games on in the background. You got quick pitch every morning. When you start to take those things away, or if you take all of them away temporarily, this is like a vacation thing for some people too. They go on real vacations. They unplug. You come back and you're like, whoa, this is not the same league it was when I stepped away. But I think there are some really interesting players to talk about this week. And one, a former top prospect getting an opportunity a bit later than we expected. Let's start with Joe Adell. I just got to ask, is it time for him to just start crushing? And is this one of the last great opportunities to spend a lot of your fab budget on one player if you're still sitting on a big pile of money in mixed leagues?
Well, I think the answer to that second question is definitely yes. I'm not really sure who else I'd be saving it up for at this late stage. And as far as whether or not it's time for him to crush, I'm really optimistic. And DVR, I'm interested to get your kind of your response to the way that I look at this, that Adell pretty much all the way through the minors needed a second go around at a level, especially as he got higher up in the Angels system. So he always did much better the second time, like really consistently. So I'm just hopeful that that is going to extend. It extended to AAA this year. I'm hopeful it will extend to the majors. I know his numbers aren't overwhelming right now. It's obviously a very small sample. But the early indicators do show improvement over the last time he was up. So, yeah, I think you got to go all in. And again, who are you saving it for anyway?
Yeah, at this point, I think, you know, use whatever you need to do to get him if a bat's going to help you. We saw power. We saw speed. We saw pretty good batting average at AAA this season. He's still just 22 years old. I think because he was on the big league radar probably for a possible late 2019 call-up, it wasn't out of the question. I think we've had these elevated expectations for him that have so far gone unmet, but most players his age are at AA. So we shouldn't hold it against him that it's taken him a little longer to adjust to some of the upper levels of the minor leagues in particular, given how much older the competition is. So I'm pretty optimistic about Adell, too. He has so many ways that he can make value. I think with the Angels, I mean, it's been a huge disappointment this season for sure, but they are wisely going to give him as much playing time as he can handle down the stretch. And, you know, Jared Walsh not being available right now obviously frees things up, but Walsh plays a lot at first base anyway, so there's not a lot of competition for those two guys with playing time. They should realize at this point Adam Eaton's probably not in their next good team, right? Like, that's the key to all of this working for Joe Adell, is Adam Eaton not playing more than he should.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And my little run with Phil Goslin probably coming to an end soon. It's been fun.
He's one of those guys. He has about 10 useful days every year, usually for more like AL or NL only leagues, but he has them nonetheless. So I think we are in agreement. Joe Adell could still do quite a bit of damage here down the stretch, has lots of ways to make value, and is worth whatever you've got left in that fab budget, or most of it. Of course, you want to leave yourself with some flexibility over the final 7 weeks of the season. We've got 7 weeks already. It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
Let's get to our next player here, Rafael Ortega, who I had no expectations for at all coming into the season. I see the roster rates continue to rise for him. I don't get it. I don't understand how he's doing what he's doing right now. He's got a 313, 371, 519 line with 6 homers and 5 steals in 55 games. A lot of that, of course, early on was more as like a pinch hitter. He's playing regularly for the Cubs. The torn down version of the Cubs has opened up a spot for Rafael Ortega. Where do we go from here? I mean, we're talking about a guy that is 30 years old. He's bounced around the league, a true journeyman already at this point. Are we going to get anything useful from him in mixed leagues the rest of the way, or has the best already happened for Ortega?
I mean, my guess is the best's already happened, but I think I need to not dismiss him and his potential for fantasy value really so quickly, because even just late last week, Michael Beller and I talked about him on Fantasy in 15, and I said about Ortega what I think I've said every time he's come up this year, which is just, well, this is a guy who can hit for average. He's done it before, but he's not really going to help you much elsewhere. But then taking a closer look before this show, he does seem to be taking a different approach. He's striking out more, but he's also hitting for more legitimate power. So maybe what he's done so far, maybe the batting average is slightly suspect, but maybe all in all, it's more legitimate than I was giving him credit for. So I'm still not really ready to take the plunge in 12-teamers. If he's still out there in 14, 15-teamers, though, I think it is time.
Yeah, because I think we've reached the point in the season where you have to be willing to take a chance on players with suspect skills if they're getting an excessive amount of playing time. And I think part of that is the shape of playing time around the league changes a little bit after the trade deadline. Contenders get better and deeper. They can afford to mix and match players a little bit more than they did earlier in the season. Non-contenders just take some guys and throw them in the lineup every single day, and somehow those guys with less skills can pile up better counting stats, more runs, more RBIs than some of their more skilled counterparts in what seems like better situations. So, like, I've tried to become more open-minded about players like Ortega just in general, but especially this time of year. If you go back to the beginning of the season, Adelis Garcia was probably one of those guys that was starting to get a lot of playing time, didn't necessarily have a major league skills track record that you could look back at and say, yeah, this guy's going to be good. Obviously had some skills flaws in the profile that have borne themselves out over the last, 2.5 months now, it seems like. But you can catch lightning in a bottle with a player who has an everyday role. And sometimes these guys hit high in the order too, which Ortega occasionally gets pretty high up in that Cubs batting order. Let's get to Ahmed Rosario, because as we've said many times on this show, it is the year of the Nando, and it seems like things are starting to fall into place for Rosario in recent weeks. And I liked him coming to the season at price because I thought he was buried. It was weird to me that people had a strong preference for Andrés Giménez, given that Giménez had only really done it in the shortened season. And Rosario's always been one of those guys where the scouting grades never really matched the production. They were always kind of better than the production. But again, someone who was young for the level everywhere he's played, and it just seemed like we were giving up on him a little too early. I thought, relatively speaking, getting him back as part of the Lindor trade was a smart sort of buy low move by Cleveland. I didn't like the return as a whole, but I liked the idea of getting Rosario back and saying, hey, let's just see what this guy does at shortstop without the pressure of being a total difference maker in a huge market, right? So we're starting to see typical Ahmed Rosario numbers when we look at the overall line for the season, and that's because the more recent numbers, last 14 days, he's hitting 340, 389, 511. He's popped a home run. He's got 3 steals during that span, and he has been caught stealing a base all season. He's 12 for 12 as a base stealer. I always wonder, Al, if Ahmed Rosario is actually a better fantasy player than he is a real life player, especially with that offensive profile, with that low OBP that he always brings.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely true. And I think that Rosario is somebody who's going to be, really useful at this point where you're more focused on categorical needs. So I just don't think that the power's going to come at this stage. I think we know the type of hitter that Rosario is, although I thought the same thing about Rafael Ortega. So, but I think what we can realistically count on is for him to continue stealing bases, give you at least a decent batting average. I think that's fair. I think that, you know, as you noted, that he's kind of regressed upwards to a point where it's in line with what we've seen before. So I think what you see is what you get with Rosario. But, you know, if you just, you need to be increasing your home runs and RBIs in the standings, he's probably, there's probably somebody better out there for you.
Yeah, for sure. But I do think he's got a shot at 20 steals. I mean, I think he could run enough to get there. Cleveland has nothing to lose at this point. They're two games below 500. I mean, they were already kind of hanging around on life support for their season when my road trip started, and now it just seems like the playoffs are out of reach for them. So they can also just lean on guys they think are going to be there in the future and see what happens. Obviously, Rosario is a part of that future. And as I mentioned with Ortega, this is a guy that hits high in the order. I mean, Rosario has hit second more than any other spot this season. So he's going to get those runs. He's going to get those steals, and the average isn't going to hurt you. If he gives you anything in those two power categories that you mentioned, it's kind of a bonus at this point. Since I'm thinking about the roadways so much, let's get down to the other part of Ohio and talk about Kyle Farmer for a moment. I didn't see him as their solution long-term at shortstop this season. And here he is. He's got a stretch of games recently where he's hit third in the batting order. That's not happening now that Nick Castellanos is healthy again. But I saw him as a bottom third of the order guy and really just more of like a bench player. And by necessity, the Reds keep trotting him out there as their regular shortstop. Is Kyle Farmer good?
He is right now. I think at least for the short term, you ride the hot hand, sort of like what you were saying about Rafael Ortega. Even if you've got doubts about the skill set, at least he, you know, you figure worst case scenario, you've just got somebody who's just on a heater, and why not ride that until it ends? So I really do feel like that's the worst case. And I think there might be something here with Farmer.
Yeah, I think the good thing with Farmer is he's keeping the K rate down, doesn't barrel the ball a ton, but I'll take a chance on someone that just makes contact this time of year, because good things can happen when you put the ball in play. And obviously in that ballpark too, you can get a bit lucky if you start hitting the ball in the air a little bit more often. But I'm just blown away at how much he's played, because I thought they would either make a move at the deadline, or they'd go younger, or they would just do something else and not let him be their everyday guy. Let's get to Rowdy Tellez, though. I'm excited about Rowdy Tellez, of course, because I'm a Brewers fan. Had a walk-off hit the other night, and had a big go-ahead home run earlier in the week against the Pirates. And this is a guy that, like a few of the Brewers' recent acquisitions, has showed up in Milwaukee and just started to mash. He's now at 323, 411, 613 in his first 23 games as a Brewer. Obviously, Keston Hira got sent down a couple of weeks ago, and playing time is really not much of a concern. Other than tough lefties, we're not going to see Rowdy sit. I looked ahead at the schedule this week, Al. Six of the first, their first six games this week for the Brewers are all against right-handed starters.
And there's not a lot of teams that have seven-game schedules. So that's, you know, if you're comparing him against your alternatives, that's as many or maybe more games than you're going to get from your alternatives. The schedule's fantastic. The first four games are against the Cubs. The following three are against the Pirates. And yeah, he's probably not going to start against Stephen Brault on Sunday. But that's a really nice schedule. He's on a tear. And as I said to Michael Beller on Fantasy in 15, he's kind of gone the Willy Adames route. That just once he showed up in Milwaukee, he just, you know, he started drinking the beer or whatever. And it's really worked out for him. A 323, 411, 613 slash line as a Brewer, and just a ton of fly balls. So that's going to play.
I think the thing that's always made Rowdy pretty interesting, of course, is the barrel rates. He's consistently been among the leaders in barrel rate ever since he first arrived in the big leagues. And what he's done in the last couple of seasons, he's cut the K rate down. He's been under 20% going back to the shortened season. So when you have a slugger who has some patience, can do that kind of damage, and has the ability to make contact at a higher clip than most guys who barrel the ball like that, you actually have a player that could be an above average regular if used correctly. And I think that's the huge caveat, is like if you're in a 10-team league that doesn't have daily moves, it becomes difficult to use a player like this who often falls on the big side of a platoon. But for the 14-team leagues and deeper out there, I think he's probably already been scooped up. But if he's still out there, I think you have to really consider, at least for this week, picking him up and throwing him out there. And I think he can play in more shallow formats when the schedule tilts as heavily towards righties as it does this week for the Brewers. let's get to another corner guy. Let's get to Carter Kieboom. And we go from a guy that barrels the ball more than most players to a guy that very rarely barrels the ball. Mm-hmm. I think someone tweeted about this fairly recently. Carter Kieboom did barrel a ball. So that's a big deal when he does it, because it doesn't happen very often. But this is a Washington team that is, again, looking to the future so they can start to look at what he might bring and figure out if he's a piece down the road. Do you have any faith in Carter Kieboom at this point? Have you lowered the expectations to the point where you think he's more of a monoleague sort of guy, or do you think there is still some mixed league appeal because of his path to regular playing time right now?
I think there's definitely mixed league appeal. If he's out there in my TGFBI 15-teamer, I definitely would be interested in picking him up just because I figure he's a candidate to help with batting average. In OBP leagues, he's even a stronger candidate to help there. And yeah, I know he didn't bring anything else really in 2020, but looking back at his stat sheet earlier today, I think he had a 344 or something in that neighborhood, a 344 OBP last year when, you know, he got really maligned for being a bust. And yeah, that alone isn't really going to give you value, but he is barreling the ball a bit more so far this year. And I think that's based on what he did in the minors. We don't really have a good reason to expect a lot more than, yeah, just some moderate power and some on-base skills and the ability to hit for average. And I think he can deliver that for the final not quite 2 months of the season.
Yeah, so I guess the way to sum it up with Kieboom would be to say that he's probably not the player we thought he could be as a prospect, but he's not the kind of guy who's completely worthless right now because he's playing so much. Like, I think the skills flaws we're seeing could push him into more of a utility role. Like, I could see that being his long-term future, but we don't have to worry about that right now. Like,
yeah.
In 2022, I probably won't have a lot of Carter Kieboom on my teams. But down the stretch here, I'm willing to take the chance, knowing that it is that sort of reduced power skill set, but it might be kind of a little bit of everything else.
Well, and let's keep in mind, too, he is 23, which, you know, I do feel like as a community, we've been maybe a little harsh about Carter Kieboom. I think there's still the chance that maybe he becomes just a little bit more than what he's been so far in the minors. But, you know, I don't think we can expect that right now. But it also wouldn't shock me to see him develop a little bit more power. And if he does it over an extended period of time, like these, you know, final 7 weeks, I'm not going to completely dismiss it.
Yeah, I wouldn't write it off completely, but I think my ceiling's probably more like 15 to 20 home runs. And yeah, it's a question as to whether or not he reaches the high end of that range. Let's talk about Eric Haas. I was sure that when Eric Haas broke onto the scene earlier this year, I said, this is fun, but this isn't going to last. And here we are in the early part of August, still talking about Eric Haas as a viable, available catcher. Why was I wrong about him?
Why were we all wrong about him? this is, if you think Ortega's performance is out of nowhere, I really don't know what to call this. And I mean, when he got on that initial hot streak and he was up to like, you know, 5, 6, 7 homers early on, I remember just completely writing it off because I had Eric Haas as a third catcher in a sim league like 2 years ago. And so that just kind of was cemented in my head, like, oh, that's who this guy is. He's not going to hang on. So obviously, yeah, he's hung on. He's hit his way into a regular role and just kept doing that. So yeah, he's very much on my list this week to pick him up.
Yeah, as you pointed out on our rundown, nice schedule this week. 3 on the road in Baltimore, 3 at home against Cleveland, which it's funny that, you know, because of all the injuries and things that have happened in that rotation this year, that used to be a series that you would maybe steer away from with a fringe player. That is obviously not the case and has not been the case for most of the summer. But yeah, Eric Haas on the growing list of players I was wrong about here in 2021.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, Al, let's get to some starting pitchers. Let's get to Luis Gil. Yes, it looks like Gil, but it is pronounced Heel. No scheduled start for this week, and by the time people hear this pod, he'll likely be making his second big league start. But he's probably going to be a factor for the Yankees again at some point during the final 7 weeks of the season. So how are you approaching him today with another turn coming before Fab runs?
Well, I'm just not quite ready yet to take the heel turn. So,
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm editing this one. I need a minute. I'm leaving it in.
Yeah, I know. That's okay. Leave it in.
But not just an opportunity for a terrible pun. I mean, I'm just not convinced, I guess, that he's going to factor in rest of season. So it certainly depends on the league format. I mean, if it's a league where I can afford to stash a player, he's got the upside to justify doing that. But it's a league where, just to give an example for my teams, my TGFBI, which is a 15-teamer, but I've got some injured guys stashed on the bench who I think will make an impact down the stretch. I'll probably make bids, but they might be contingency bids on Heel. I think it really does depend on my bench depth.
Yeah, he's a tough player to stash in a mixed league. So as excited as I am about him, I think it's mostly AL only for now because he's obviously better than probably a few guys on a bench in a league like that. Anything with a long-term component, any sort of keeper or dynasty league. I think in most dynasty leagues, he's been rostered for a long time. But in some keeper leagues, there's a chance that he's out there and there might be enough appeal to go ahead and actually stash him away because I could see him being a big part of the plan in 2022. And I think Heels is the kind of player that is a good reminder of why in a keeper league, even if you're not contending, it is important to churn on the waiver wire every single week. There are so many opportunities to make your roster just a little bit better. And if you do that enough times, you can put yourself in a much better position the following season than if you sort of check out and just say, hey, I got other leagues, I got other stuff going on. I'm not going to worry about it. You know, great players don't come off the waiver wire. Everybody who's ever played in a long-term league has a story about a current first-round player who at one point in time was scooped up off the waiver wire before they became that good, right? So I'm not saying that's necessarily what Heel is going to do, but he's the kind of player that I think has enough ceiling and there's enough questions about the 2022 Yankees rotation to where you'd probably want to say, yeah, let's go ahead and stash him away and see what happens. Now, I mentioned before, year of the Nando, this is a total Nando guy. Nestor Cortez also in the mix for the Yankees right now. He's usually just this sort of like ideal like long man follower type, right? 2.15 ERA, 1.04 WHIP. Went five innings last time out against Seattle, so we're getting a little more depth. Went five innings against the Rays in the turn before that. Are you trusting this in terms of workload and in terms of the general skills here? Not the ratios necessarily. A 2.15 and a 1.04, that's not going to continue, but we're over a strikeout per inning. He's not having any issues with home runs, and he doesn't really walk that many guys either.
Yeah, I mean, I trust the ratios not in terms of him maintaining the just really outstanding current ones he has, but having useful ones going forward. And I think he'll be tacking on to that because even with Gerrit Cole and Jordan Montgomery, whenever they come back, I think there's a spot there as the fifth starter for the Yankees. So as long as he keeps pitching as well as he has, I think he stays in the rotation. So I certainly would like to have him active this week against the Royals and definitely not a pitch and ditch type with the profile that he's got.
Right. I think Cortez's success might be part of the reason why it's going to be difficult for Heel to actually break through on a regular basis right now. But again, we'll keep an eye on both of these guys because they're both interesting with the little opportunities that they're getting at this point. Cortez much more on firm ground at this point. Let's go over to Toronto and talk about Steven Matz, who I swear is available in every 12-team league I'm in all the time. Like, I know he gets rostered. I know people use him, especially for two-start weeks, which he has this week. He is at the Angels, at the Mariners. What is your trust level in Steven Matz right now? Because I feel like that's a constantly changing trust level. Like, he's just one of those guys. Like, when he's going good, people start to buy in. He blows up. Everyone abandons ship and then we do it again.
Yeah, lather, rinse, repeat. Well, I do trust him for this week, which I know doesn't really answer your question, but I like the matchups a lot. And he is out there in at least one of my 12 teamers, so he's definitely a priority for me this particular week. Beyond that, I'm not sure that I'll keep him rostered after this week. It's definitely going to be a week-by-week decision because of that pattern that you mentioned. I know that there's certainly going to be a blow-up coming. I expect that anyway. So if I see somebody I'd rather have in that roster spot, I'm not going to have any compunction about dropping Mats after this week.
Right. And I think the reason I would be comfortable taking the chance on him this week, I'm not afraid of the Mariners in particular for that second matchup. I think those are, you know, those are good matchups, not great on the whole for a two-star week. But I think with Mats, there's almost like no rhyme or reason to the matchups that get to him. You know, he gets hit by bad teams sometimes. He shuts out good teams sometimes. I mean, he's got a little more variance and less predictability from a start-by-start basis than most pitchers. But the reason I believe in him in a two-start week especially is, you know, the Ks are going to be there, right? I mean, 99 yeah. Ks and 96 in the third inning. So with two starts, you should get at least 10 strikeouts with room for a bit more from Steven Matz. Let's talk about his NL counterpart, Drew Smyly, who I feel like is also frequently added and dropped, often by me. His matchups, home against Cincinnati, road against the Nationals, and again, that's a Nationals team. It's not quite at the level we expected to be coming into the season, so wouldn't be as fearful of them as I was several months back. Where are you at with Smyly, and how do you compare him to Steven Matz if both are available?
Well, for this week, I like Matz better because I actually think I like those matchups a little better than you do. But overall, like if you just look over the last 7 weeks, I'd be probably more inclined to start Drew Smyly for more of those weeks than I would for Matz. So maybe I miss a window. Maybe he does really well with these two starts. The start against the Reds worries me enough that I'm not really looking to pick him up for this week, especially in a league where I would have to start him. But if I get through this window, he'll probably be on my radar again next week because he's actually been fairly consistent lately.
Yeah, he surprisingly has. And I look at guys like this, though, and I always wonder if there's actually a more consistent level they can reach or if they're just going to be stuck in this middle ground, like the mid-4s ERA, bad whip, lots of Ks, kind of like Robbie Ray ratios territory. Like, are they destined to live there forever? And then like the Ray season we just saw happens, you're like, oh, maybe it can happen. Maybe I shouldn't give up on these guys. I find them very difficult to cut because of the flashes. They show just enough to make you think that they could figure it all out. And then they have those untimely blow-ups and kind of reset everything back to phase one. Let's go to Jose Suarez, though, next, Al, because he continues to pitch really well. The matchups this week are horrible. He's at Toronto and home against Houston. That seems like an impossible combo to use him for unless you're at a point in the season where you're low in ratios and you can't get hurt. Like if you're near the bottom in those categories, you're just trying to get lucky basically with a couple of starts or one good start and one passable one. That's the scenario that you're most likely to get on the good end. And obviously the downside scenarios are a lot worse, but ratios look good. And he's getting deeper into his starts, getting five innings on a somewhat regular basis. So where are you at with Jose Suarez based on what we've seen here over these last couple of weeks?
Well, I'm actually a little bit more skeptical than I was just a couple of weeks ago because I was really excited about him getting in the rotation after pitching so well in a relief role. But we haven't really seen him tested that much. His first start was against the Red Sox, which was a tough matchup. It was not a great start. And then the four that he's had since then, at Seattle, at Oakland, and Oakland has not hit for the last several weeks. Colorado Rockies not in Colorado, so that's always a great matchup. And then at Texas, and we'll talk about how great that matchup is a little bit later. So I remain a little bit skeptical of those ratios that he's put up as a starter. So I am definitely, obviously, I'm avoiding this week under every circumstance. And it sounds like maybe it would be a good idea to just stash him this week and kind of play wait and see with Suarez. But I'm not really making it a priority, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm looking at my leagues right now, and there's a handful. I mean, there's a cut line league that doesn't count because you can't pick him up there. There's a 15-teamer where he's available. There's a 12 where he's available. There's still a lot of skeptics of Jose Suarez looking mm-hmm. across the different types of leagues I play in and how many leagues he's available in. But it's tough to use a roster spot on a guy that you really don't want to use for a week. So I think I'd be comfortable letting someone else possibly pick him up, letting them possibly absorb some ratios damage, and then maybe they cut him and I can scoop him up in a week or two with a more favorable matchup. Because I'm sure there will be streaming opportunities for Jose Suarez down the stretch, but he's not necessarily a guy that you have to have just glued to your roster at this point. I think that also describes our next player, Alec Mills. He's home against the Brewers, on the road against the Marlins, and man, those matchups on the road against Miami, like those just jump off the page to me when I'm looking for streaming opportunities. So is the second matchup good enough to go ahead and trust him in weekly leagues with that first one against the Brewers?
Trust is a strong word for me with that one because of the first start. But he's definitely somebody I'll be thinking about in my 12-teamer where I would really like to add an extra start for next week. I haven't put that move in yet just because I am hesitant with that start against Milwaukee. So it's something that I'll think about. That's kind of where I'm at with Alec Mills. He's definitely shown some pretty good consistency lately. He's the sort of pitcher that you do wait for the two start week so that you can double up on the strikeouts. But yeah, I'm just not sure at this point. Very borderline.
Rest of season, would you take the under on his current ratios? He's at 4.41 for the ERA and 1.44 for the WHIP.
Yeah, I would definitely take the under.
Yeah, I think the ERA I could see being only slightly under, and I think the career numbers are a pretty good guide with Mills. 4.24 ERA, 1.27 WHIP. I think that's in line with my own expectations. And as you said, the extra volume for him is important because the K rate is just a tick lower. I mentioned earlier being kind of drawn into these players that look like they're going to figure it out, and then they blow up, and then you kind of just do that song and dance. You don't know if you want to cut them. Tristan McKenzie has been that kind of player this year. I thought he was going to be a really nice breakout pitcher on the list of things I was wrong about for 2021, at least so far. But we've seen some occasional flashes. More recently, we've seen him go 7-6-7 in three of his last five starts, but those starts are around a couple of four-inning blowups against the White Sox and the Astros, so tough matchups in particular. Obviously, you weren't probably using him for those, but you see Ks too. I mean, lots of strikeouts for McKenzie this year, 83 over 70 and a third innings. And look at the hit count too, only 51 hits allowed. It's weird to me that he allows as much hard contact as he does, because it seems like opposing hitters generally don't see him very well, but then he just makes a mistake and they take advantage of it.
Yeah, well, we talked about Robbie Ray earlier, so that used to be a part of his profile. It still is to some degree, but you know, you're suggesting maybe this is like a skills consolidation. I feel like that's maybe something that's still to come for McKenzie, because while overall the K rate's pretty impressive, it is trending in the wrong direction, and he is giving up those long balls. So I would just love to see at least two or three starts in a row where he's keeping the walk rate low like he has over the last like four or five starts or so, and then let's see the strikeouts come back up and not quite as much hard contact. So he's getting there. I don't really love him for this week. The first starts against Oakland, and as I just noted, they've been a pretty good matchup of late. The Tigers, I know this is kind of bizarro world, but the Tigers are a little bit of a scary matchup right now. So I think because of that, I would actually avoid McKenzie.
Yeah, I think I'm willing to take the chance in deeper leagues. I don't think he's necessarily a 12-team pickup for me unless I'm in that dreaded ratios are already done, so it doesn't really matter situation. I'm just chasing wins and Ks. I think in 14, 15 team leagues I'm in. The main reason I'm interested, though, more recently, is that the stuff number, you know, the big black box stuff that Eno works on with Max Bay, the stuff plus number has been good. Five consecutive starts, at least average each time out. The slider for the season is now an above average pitch. The curveball's been at least average, and the fastball's not bad. So there's just enough there in the underlying numbers with those pitch types, even though the velocity I know has been a problem for McKenzie really throughout his time in the big leagues. Holding that consistently has been an issue for him. I'm still just a little more on the optimistic side with McKenzie. Like, I would take him over Mills. I would take him over Suarez. I think he probably belongs in the Matt Smiley conversation for me, at least as someone that you could think about picking up and maybe even hold him beyond the two-start week. You're not locked into it, but it's at least something to think about.
Yeah, no, I think that that's the right context for McKenzie.
I think we've reached the point of our rundown where we're in the can you talk me into these players group. Colby Allard, who I think we've talked about before, either you and I or Beller and I have talked about him with these exact matchups at Seattle, home against Oakland. It's in division, so I'm sure it's come up before, but I don't see anything there in terms of like a ceiling. I see just pure floor. It's an absolute volume play for Colby Allard. I think I'd put him at the bottom of the Suarez-Mills group, at least of the two start pitchers that we've talked about so far with those two matchups on tap. I mean, Seattle, again, it's not a bad matchup at all. Oakland, that's the Colby Allard's the kind of guy that Oakland can sort of get right against if they're in a slump. Like, he's exactly the kind of guy they could start to hit. So I'm just trying to be really careful with him.
Well, and that was something I wrote about for this week and next week in Fantasy Baseball, how Oakland is sort of barely trending in the right direction offensively. But this this could be a week with the schedule that they have, particularly against the Rangers, where you're right, those hitters could get right. So yeah, I want nothing to do with Allard, even with those matchups.
I want nothing to do with Logan Allen either. He's got the Reds, and then he's got the Tigers on the road. Just a pure desperation play. I think he's AL only, leagues only at this point. Is there anything I'm missing with Allen?
No, it's just an oof for him.
All right, a couple of one-star guys who I think are a little easier to talk me into. Joe Ross, who has a matchup against the Mets on the road this week. I think he actually makes more sense than Paulo Espino, who does have a two-star week for the Nationals. But Ross, he had one really bad blow-up earlier this season. We talked about it on an episode of Under the Radar because I think Ian Kahn had mentioned he'd streamed him everywhere and absorbed all of the bad ratios from that start, but he's actually pitching very well, especially if you zoom in on the last few weeks.
Yeah, it really, I mean, kind of amazing, actually, that he's in this discussion of pitchers to pick up, because this has been an extended string of consistently good starts since the very beginning of June. So a third of a season where Ross is pitching like somebody who really should just be universally rostered. A 2.80 ERA, that's really only just ever so slightly the result of maybe some good luck. But well over a strikeout per inning, 11 walks in 54 and two-thirds. Not really doing the best job of managing contact, but doing a good enough job that, you know, he's pitched himself to a 3.50 ERA in terms of what the indicators suggest.
Yeah, I was wondering if he stacks up pretty favorably to Ross Stripling, who also had some pretty ugly blow-ups earlier this season and has been much more useful recently. I think his ERA is more in the 4 range over the last 2 months, but the whip is good. The Ks are solid. Obviously, the team context is favorable too. I just think it's so easy to lose sight of what happens in June and July after a bad April or a bad May or a bad 2 month stretch to begin the season. And it wasn't even the case where Ross was necessarily bad for that entire beginning of the season. It was just really one horrible start that shaped people's perception of him. So I think that was a really good call to point him out as someone to go after this week. And then there's Tyler Anderson, who I've been pretty happy with all season long. He was someone that popped on the aforementioned stuff and command metrics really early in the year with Pittsburgh. And the opportunity for him in Seattle is a good one, and he's got the Rangers. I mean, that's a dream matchup for streaming purposes. Even if you don't like the pitcher, you have to at least consider taking the chance on Anderson this week against Texas, don't you?
I think you do, and so that's just something that I've done the last few weeks is look just specifically and say, okay, who's facing the Rangers? Because you can talk about the Royals or the Marlins or lately the Athletics and any number of teams that just are really good to stream against. But Rangers are kind of in a whole different category. They're hitting since the All-Star break, 171 is a team, which is kind of mind-boggling. I don't know how a whole lineup can be that ineffective all at once, but it comes out to a 236 WOBA. When you consider that anything under 300 is pretty bad, and they're at a 236 since the break, how can you not stream a pitcher who's just been, at least decent throughout the season? And I think you make the argument, as you just have DVR, that Anderson's a little better than just decent.
Yeah, I think he's at least an average big league starter. And in our game, that's better than decent at this point, which is kind of a funny little twist. But the matchups this week, just looking at the pitchers going up against the Rangers, Logan Gilbert, of course, you're starting him. Tyler Anderson, who we just talked about. Marco Gonzalez, even with his struggles, I'd throw him against the Rangers and not really think twice about it. Sean Manaea, of course, is going to be active for everybody who has him. James Caprillion gets them next weekend. And then Frankie Montas, like all six of those guys are viable options for me. Anywhere where a few of those guys might be available, I would strongly consider picking them up.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
"Thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options."
Which is why when you choose USAA auto insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today. Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas.
Let's get over to some relievers, though, Al. Let's get to a couple bullpens that are in flux. And this is one of the things that changes the fastest, by the way. When you take a few days away from fantasy baseball and you come back and you're like, oh, Tyler Clippard is getting saves and people are interested in him. The numbers this season have been really good. I think it's easy to miss it because he wasn't closing in Minnesota, but he's got a couple saves now since joining the Diamondbacks. The ratios have been good. He's got a 32-5 strikeout to walk ratio in 33 innings this season. So are you on board with Tyler Clippard?
I am, very much so. Anytime he's in the discussion to close out games, I'm really into that because I think he's just got the profile to do it. The only thing is that he's just very consistently a fly ball pitcher, and he's kind of, in a really small sample, fit that profile to almost a comical level. He's allowed 18 batted balls, 2 have been grounders so far, and you would just, you know, write that up to small sample craziness, except for the fact that I think it was in 2018, he had a whole season with a ground ball rate that was under 20%. So that there's always that risk with him to give up a crucial home run. But, you know, otherwise, I really like the profile.
Yeah, I'm surprised that he's still this good at age 36. Surprised he's not pitching for a contender given how well he's pitched. But here we are. I mean, just getting it done this season in this limited stretch here with Arizona. I want to get to Giovanni Gallegos, Al, because Alex Reyes, who was phenomenal to start the season, has been struggling in recent weeks. And I still think Reyes is the guy that they want to see in that role. But Gallegos is the next guy up if they do make a change, isn't he?
He is. Well, he got the save on Saturday, but I think that was probably more an issue of Reyes not being available. But he did well, and I mean, that means something to me because they both had struggled in their last few outings, and so for Gallegos to have an effective outing and one in which he could record a save, that, you know, it just means that I think he's that much closer that if Reyes goes out and blows another save and it does so in spectacular fashion like he did the last time out, that makes Gallegos a little bit more of a reliable option. So I think in a league where you actually have the luxury to maybe stash a save source, that Gallegos is maybe after Clippard for me. He's next up on my radar.
Yeah, I think the upside with Gallegos is that even if Reyes keeps the job, you're going to feel good enough about throwing him in your lineup every week. And I wonder with Clippard if the workload might still be a little bit light. I misspoke before. I said people may have missed what he was doing this season. He was not pitching earlier this year for Minnesota. He was pitching for Minnesota last year and was really good. But it was, you know, health, of course, that kept him from pitching a little earlier this year. He had a shoulder injury that had slowed him down. The other name that I think is interesting, you threw this guy on the rundown, Jake Brents, and it's only interesting because the Royals, it just seems like they cannot settle on one closer. So partial closers have plenty of value. We've talked about them throughout this season. Is Jake Brents one of those partial closers that you're willing to take a chance on?
Yeah, he is. I mean, maybe not the best reliever who falls into that category because he does walk so many batters. But I find him intriguing too, just because of the way that he got used earlier in the week in a save situation that he converted when it looked like it, you know, wasn't necessary. There wasn't a particular reason for him to be used in that situation. So it definitely seems like he's up at minimum a part of the Royals mix right now. And with the Royals being in the situation where, you know, they could just give guys a look, I mean, it would seem like they'd have much more incentive to do that with Brents than they would certainly with Greg Holland. And maybe even with Scott Barlow, who's had plenty of looks this year in high leverage, and maybe Brents gets a little bit of a larger share of those opportunities. So yeah, he's not somebody that I'm looking to add in leagues where there's choices and you can get somebody maybe who's getting a more steady stream of saves. But in leagues where there's just, you know, it's tumbleweeds out there on waivers in terms of saves, Brents is probably one of the better options.
I've seen literal tumbleweeds this week, so that hits home. So the other name that I think is kind of interesting, I'm just looking at some news from this morning, Lucas Sims will be activated from the 10-day IL prior to Sunday's game against the Pirates. There are probably a lot of leagues where he was dropped, because especially if you don't have IL spots or if you have a limited number of them, there was really no reason to justify using one of those spots on Sims. Do you think there's a chance he gets back into the closing picture for the Reds?
In the picture, yes. As a sole closer, I think that's pretty unlikely, because it's very similar to the Royal situation. It's just there's not been somebody who's just taken that job and run with it. So I think that Sims maybe draws, or rather adds himself to a seemingly ever-growing cast of candidates to close out games, and it kind of ruins the value for everybody involved.
And speaking of committees, I wonder if we're going to see that in the Bronx. Aroldis Chapman on the IL. He had an MRI on Saturday. No damage to his actual ligament in his elbow, just typical wear and tear. So inflammation for him. But is it Chad Green? Is it Jonathan Loaisiga? Is it someone else entirely? I mean, where do the Yankees go in Chapman's absence?
Well, they went with Loaisiga on Saturday. But that one's a little bit hard to read. I don't expect that they're going to go exclusively to Loaisiga. So I think that, much like Cincinnati, at least in the short term, is one that's probably going to be spread a little too thin.
I think the good thing about Loaisiga is kind of like the Gallego situation in St. Louis, where even if he's not getting saves, he's been good enough to use in a lot of leagues anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, those relievers certainly have values where, you know, it's the tumbleweed situation. So that's a good call.
Yeah, but I think that is about it for reliever news. I know the Brewers, because of different issues with Josh Hader and Devin Williams, they had Brent Suter on to try and get a save. I wouldn't go pick up Suter because of that. That's just the result of the current iteration of the Brewers bullpen. I don't expect him to be a regular option for those opportunities, but we're at that point of the season where things will change very quickly. We're going to have all these bullpens that continue to lose pieces because guys are going to get shut down for various reasons, right? The guys who are important for the future on non-contending teams, if there's even a minor injury, we're reaching that point where they're going to take longer than expected to come back. And I think that also, it wreaks havoc on every part of the roster, but the bullpen is one of those areas where it can make the biggest impact if you're still chasing those last few saves that ultimately could be the difference between finishing in the money or not, or winning the league and taking second.
Yeah, very well could be. It's crucial is that, each save is worth a lot at this point if you're at all contending in that category.
Absolutely. That is going to wrap things up for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. On Twitter, you can find Al at AlMelchiorBB. You can find me at Derek Van Riper. We are back with you Tuesday with Under the Radar.